In what I would consider his magnum opus, Barbarossa spoke about the Voyager, and specifically the welcome message from humanity to the universe we sent on board. He focused on three images in particular, which he considered to be the most important images ever captured in our human history, depicting the birth of the human male and the transfer of knowledge from father to son. It's inspiring stuff, but we really have to ask the question whether we were truly honest about the representation of ourselves that we sent out into the universe on Voyager. The Voyager Golden Record contains no reference to war. Like it or not, war is a central component to human history and our human present. In C.S. MGTOW's video, The New Malthusian Trap, he laments the fact that we really haven't progressed a great deal in the last 40 years. Progress has more or less plateaued, and the planes and cars that we travel in today are in fact the same basic design that existed in the 70s. Believe it or not, the Boeing 747 first flew in 1969, and it's still one of the most common airliners in service today. Now, CS talked about many trappings of modern consumerism that led to this developmental stagnation. Although, I can't help but wonder if this isn't also in part due to the fact that we really haven't had any large-scale conflicts in the last half century that truly pushed developed industrialized nations to the absolute brink of survival. Biplanes, helicopters, nuclear fission, all of these things were rapidly developed in times of conflict to be used as tools of war. World War II, the most devastating conflict in human history, was a clash of civilizations that literally spanned continents. Millions died, entire cities that had stood for centuries were carpet bombed to rubble. Yet, over that six-year conflict, as a matter of survival, tremendous leaps were made in medicine, mechanical engineering, rocket science, and computing. In the span of that six-year conflict, the Germans went from propeller-driven Messerschmitt ME-109s to the world's first ME-262 jet fighters. The stakes for both personal and ideological survival were so high that development of new technologies to win were pushed beyond the envelope on both sides of the conflict. Even the space race that immediately followed played out against a backdrop of Cold War with the Soviets, as well as Korea, Vietnam. Additionally, the technology itself was largely based on the wartime rocket technology developed by the Germans. Comparatively, over the last 40 years or so, conflicts have been relatively minor, with self-contained effects that are rarely felt by the majority of Western citizens who make up the industrialized nations involved in those conflicts. The Manhattan Project saw us enter the nuclear age. For better or worse, the course of humanity fundamentally changed when Little Boy detonated over Hiroshima. Nuclear energy now accounts for over 10% of the world's total energy production, and to this day, people are still debating the ethics of dropping the bomb after Emperor Hirohito's initial offer of conditional Japanese surrender. I'm not sure the same can be said for the civilizational impact of some faceless guy remotely piloting a Predator drone, blowing up some nondescript bunker in the middle of the Afghan desert that, you know, we probably won't even hear about unless somebody commits treason and slips WikiLeaks a bunch of classified diplomatic cables. During World War II, when England was being bombed on an almost daily basis, the conflict affected everyone directly, particularly the soldiers. Of the 125,000 men that joined the RAF Bomber Command, 55,573 were killed in action. That's a survival rate of just over 50%. So when those men enlisted, they were basically playing Russian roulette with, you know, three rounds in the chamber. Comparatively, there is virtually zero risk to a modern drone pilot sitting at a computer 1,000 miles from the front line. I guess if he's unlucky, he might risk spilling a hot cup of coffee on himself. Now, there's no denying that frontline infantrymen still have one of the most dangerous jobs in the world. But even then, being posted to Iraq or Afghanistan today is not the same as charging over the top of a trench at Gallipoli or running up the beach at Normandy headlong into, you know, oncoming German machine gun fire. Even for frontline troops, the risks and frankly the expectation of sacrifice just isn't the same as what it used to be. And that's to say nothing of the citizens sitting back at home completely unawares. Obviously, there are paradigm-shifting events that we are acutely aware of here in the First World. The world stood still the day those planes flew into the World Trade Center. Even here in Australia, for almost an entire week afterwards, you could switch the television on to any given channel and see the same 3 minutes of footage on repeat. Planes impacting, buildings falling. It was a really surreal moment in modern history. However, it did not push the US to the brink the way Europe was pushed in World War II. For all of the fear-mongering about Al-Qaeda and Islamic State, the annual death rate to US citizens caused by local gun violence outweighs the number of deaths from terrorism by almost three orders of magnitude. France, as absolutely tragic as those 129 murders were, will lose 25 times more people this year just from traffic accidents. What happened in France is a tragedy, and it's terrifying in as far as it fuels irrational, nightmare-filled contemplation about what could happen to you when you least expect it. But the chances of your nightmare actually coming true are about 100 times less likely than being struck by lightning. That irrational fear of terrorism really doesn't reflect a true survival threat to the French population or the French way of life. Not in the same way the Nazi panzer divisions did when they rolled into the heart of Paris in 1940. Despite our ever-growing fear of terrorism, some guy rolling around in the desert on the back of a Hilux ute with a rusty Cold War 50 cal really poses no immediate threat to Western civilization. The truth is that, you know, as individuals, we are safer now than we have ever been in all of human history. And I think on some unconscious level, we must recognize this. I mean, as a population, we're scared. Specifically, women are scared. So much so that they're now claiming they need protection from office air conditioning. But that's really a topic for another video. Despite our costly and continued political placation of women's desperate, irrational need to feel safe, the threat just isn't real enough to actually trigger a civilizational fight or flight response in men. We're not scared enough yet for men, the builders and drivers of civilization, to actively push for the rapid development of like a functional pulse detonation engine to replace the 60-year-old turbojets we developed during World War II. Now, I agree with CS that our developmental stagnation is worrying. But the far more terrifying question for me is what happens if we are pushed past this point of stagnation? Stagnation is not ideal, but where will future technology lead us if the major advances are fundamentally fueled by widespread conflict? Muskets turned into repeater rifles, horses turned into tanks, biplanes became jets, which became remote-controlled drones. Technology continues to advance in such a way that, for those that control it at least, the risk of casualties are moving inversely to the scope of destruction they can cause, which is, it's all well and good for, you know, reputedly benevolent superpowers who just want to spread peace and democracy. But as a species, we fundamentally crossed a threshold with the Manhattan Project that has put all of humanity equally at risk. See, for all the good that nuclear energy has done for us, the term weapon of mass destruction is not a misnomer. At the height of the Cold War, we basically had enough thermonuclear weapons pointed at each other that we could have effectively wiped out human life on Earth. If not from the initial firestorm, then the radioactive fallout that followed. Our very concept of warfare changed with that technology. During the Cold War, we fundamentally moved past any pretext of winning and losing and set a new goal of mutually assured destruction. And we came dangerously close to achieving that goal. From Wikipedia, on 26th of September 1983, The Nuclear Early Warning System of the Soviet Union twice reported the launch of American Minutemen intercontinental ballistic missiles from bases in the United States. These missile attack warnings were correctly identified as a false alarm by Stanislav Yegrefovich Petrov, an officer of the Soviet Air Defense Forces. This decision is seen as having prevented a retaliatory nuclear attack based on erroneous data of the United States and its NATO allies, which would have likely resulted in nuclear war and the deaths of hundreds of millions of people. Investigation of the satellite warning system later confirmed that the system had malfunctioned. The incident occurred at a time of severely strained relations between the United States and the Soviet Union. Only 1 week earlier, the Soviet military had shot down a South Korean passenger jet, Korean Airline Flight 007, that had strayed into Soviet airspace, killing all 269 people on board. Many Americans were killed, including US Congressman Larry McDonald. Now, this next quote puts the incident into spine-chilling context for me. Bruce Blair, an expert on Cold War nuclear strategies and former president of the World Security Institute in Washington, D.C., says, "The American-Soviet relationship at the time had deteriorated to a point where the Soviet Union is a system, not just the Kremlin, not just the Soviet leader Yuri Andropov, not just the KGB, but as a system was geared to expect an attack and to retaliate very quickly to it. It was on hair-trigger alert. It was very nervous and prone to mistakes and accidents. The false alarm that happened on Petrov's watch could not have come at a more dangerous, intense phase in US-Soviet relations." That's how close we came to total annihilation in 1983. A hair trigger, a false alarm. It could have gone very, very badly for humanity. Not as a collection of warring nations, but as an entire planet-bound species. I personally hope we don't become entrenched in a new Malthusian trap. I hope we progress to a Type 2 civilization. I hope we one day get off this rock and colonize other planets in our solar system. Perhaps we'll even be able to leave our solar system and step into the universe, not with robotic drones, but as an actual spacefaring species. But if we do get past this current developmental slump we're in, the equally terrifying possibility is that our intelligence itself and its ability to create and explore biosphere-destroying technology represents something of an evolutionary termination point. I've often pondered the possibility of, you know, extraterrestrial life in the universe. The Drake equation makes a lot of sense to me. There is almost certainly alien life out there somewhere, but if they're anything like us, I'm not sure we'll ever get the chance to meet them before they destroy themselves. And the same may happen to us. I guess you could imagine a hypothetically peaceful species all working together, but assuming Darwinian evolution within a harsh struggle of nature works the same way on that hypothetical planet as it did here, I don't think that would be the case. Everything I've seen and everything I know about the world tells me that progress, both biological and civilizational, arises from adversity. It's something of an oversimplified description of evolution, but nonetheless, there is a foundational truth to the saying, survival of the fittest. Talking in terms of the Kardashev scale, which basically categorizes civilizational advancement by the ability to produce or harness power, the power required to destroy a planet's biosphere is always going to be arrived at well before the power to adequately leave and colonize other planets. Once a species that thrives on conflict develops technology powerful enough to wipe themselves out, you've got to ask, how many generations of further conflict can they possibly survive after that point? If we ever want to survive and progress past this possible evolutionary termination point, we need to do better than a never-ending arms race where paradigm-shifting advancement is only a byproduct of human conflict. Now, I know this has been somewhat of a pessimistic video, but I don't think it's all doom and gloom either. The last century and a half of industrialization, up to and including the nuclear age, has been a tumultuous learning curve, our roles in life, especially our gender roles, have changed dramatically, almost on a decade-by-decade basis. But I think things are finally starting to stabilize. I think we're starting to see a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think Japan gives us a pretty good glimpse of what that light may look like. Some estimates put the percentage of herbivore men in the 20 to 35-year-old demographic at around 60%. That's almost a two-thirds majority. This is important, not because it's the age demographic for starting families or the age for building future career prospects or whatever, but because 20 to 35 is also the common age demographic for military conscription. See, if the Japanese government turned around tomorrow and decided, you know, they wanted to have another crack at conquering China, I don't think that shit would fly the way it did in 1937. Their society has changed too much. Specifically, men have changed. Japanese men have woken up from a 1,000-year slumber of traditionalism, feudalism, and imperialism to a world of readily available internet pornography and robotic farming. And they've realized, unconsciously and en masse, that in this new world, they don't need to be the blood that greases society's gears anymore. Any sense of nationalism or traditional obligation, especially in as far as sacrificing themselves to support useless, parasitic, stay-at-home lady children, is gone. These Japanese men are already opting out in a way that could be described as protesting their unwilling conscription into the role of corporate samurai. Seriously, how do you think it's going to go if the government, like, tries to conscript these same men into military service? With a 60% majority of these conscription-age men already living as grass eaters, I don't think they get the support numbers they needed. I don't think it's feasible. Even if they started to drag young grass eaters to the boot camp by force, these men, who now make up a majority, would not constitute an effective military. Even in traditionalist Japan, where school children are taught that a nail which sticks up should be hammered back down, we are dealing with a fundamentally new breed of man, a man who prioritizes his freedom. Now, in a great many ways, the grass eaters almost represent the very embodiment of the new Malthusian trap CS was talking about. But there is something to be taken away from this. While the Japanese grass eaters are men going their own way by the strictest definition of the phrase, MGTOW as a movement, as we understand it, has one very important thing going for it that the grass eaters lack. And that, gentlemen, is knowledge. The grass eaters have no Barbarossa. They have no Stardust, or CS, or Nico, or Spetsnaz. I see men having the opportunity to free themselves from this developmental arms race, but far from a simple rejection of traditionalist disposability like the grass eaters, this freedom is based on an enlightened male understanding of self and a personal quest for knowledge and future advancement. In the past, loners like Nikola Tesla existed as complete aberrations to the Victorian and Edwardian traditionalism of the day. In future, as more men begin to value their personal freedom in the face of technology and increasingly dysfunctional female behaviour, these self-interested, inquisitive, inventive men could actually become the new normal. As more and more men drop out and pursue their own interests rather than the interests of women, we may not need to rely on warfare as a tangential means of escaping the new Malthusian trap. Manufactured nationalistic pride no longer works. White feathers of shame no longer work. I see a future where, rather than an army of conscripted soldiers with guns shoved into their hands, we will come together and form a grassroots army full of Nikola Teslas, each armed with nothing more than his own imagination and the freedom to pursue his dreams. Make no mistake, gentlemen, we are entering a new age, being forged by a new kind of man. I started this video with a reference to Barbarossa's Powered by Orgasm, and it seems appropriate to end here with the same final thought. What ought to crawl has learned to walk.